values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
And there's a very cool opportunity for you, our KTAR Paw Picks Contest. Send in pictures of your pets. You can do it at ktar.com/contest. Each month, we will randomly select pet photos, and someone is going to win a $100 Amazon gift card. So do that right now. It's kind of a cool thing we're doing. And check out the picks. Phoenix Police Chief Michael Sullivan joined me in studio first thing this morning, 8:15. He was in for two segments talking about the crime reduction plan in the city of Phoenix. Now, you've heard me be very pro-cop, and I am very pro-cop. There's no doubt about that. I think law enforcement is public safety in general. The people out there that risk their lives to save others every day as a job are impressive to me. It is an amazingly difficult job to do. But, you know, again, when you see something, we got a crime reduction plan and this, it's your eyes almost gloss over and you think, okay, here comes more political stuff. You know, in other words, this is what we're going to do and we want to fight crime and we're going to do this. And I have to admit, I've met Chief Sullivan on a number of occasions. I think he's a good guy. I really do. But I was skeptical when I heard that they were coming out with a crime reduction plan like anybody else would, because it seems like something you have to do. I looked at this. It's 10 pages in an overview for citizens, and it is a great plan. I've asked some cops that I know, and they think it is a great, it's a very good plan. The only concern anybody has is, do we have the staffing in Phoenix to pull it off? But I want you to hear a couple of things from this that the chief had to say. And I'm going to start with a couple of the questions I asked him. I want to get to where these questions are in this plan. And there are four basic principles to this plan. They're going after the most violent people in the most active places. They're looking at prohibited possessors. Those are people that are in possession of firearms that by law should not have them because they are convicted felons. The law says you are not allowed to be around firearms. They're focusing on them. And fourth, violent offenders with outstanding arrest warrants. So this has always been a focus, but they are going to be laser focused on that area. So in those four areas, they believe and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, that staffing at Phoenix PD is not optimal right now. It's understaffed. If they're laser focused as an agency in these areas, because it's different in different neighborhoods, that's one of the things that they say, that there are hot spots. It's not just hot parts of town. So, and I mean, no offense by what I'm about to say, but people would say, okay, Maryvale and South Phoenix would probably be higher crime areas than Desert Horizon Precinct or the Mountain View Precinct where Arcadia and that's, you know, okay, fair enough. If you want to be that kind of a mile high view of things, but within each precinct, there are hot spots. So there's different plans for different neighborhoods. And here's what the chief had to say about that.
It's nuanced for each precinct and each area of the city. And that's why the plan needs to be specific. And there needs to be plans that are put together that support this plan at the bureau and the precinct level.
Yeah. And so he talked about that, different neighborhoods. There's just different solutions.
We need to make sure that we're looking at each area distinct that it is and making sure that it's addressed through a community approach. It's not just a police approach. We want solutions that are going to last.
And so we got into the conversation about community, because it's one thing. We know about the defund the police movement. That's the extreme of one side of this. I'm the extreme on the other, which is I am very pro law enforcement. And that doesn't mean that I don't recognize that there are bad police officers, and I hate them as much as anybody else does. I think they're horrible for the profession. It makes my job defending cops harder, but I also believe they are the exception and not the rule. There are those that believe that they are the rule, but there may be exceptions on opposite ends. But the idea that a community, first of all, you have to feel safe to tell the police. And in some neighborhoods, you know, snitches get stitches. And that still is a very true principle. But they also have to trust that the police are going to do something with the information. If they're going to step out of their comfort zone and say to a police officer or a detective, whatever, and they say, hey, listen, this is what I know, and I am willing to tell you this, here's the information. They have to feel comfortable that the police are going to take that information and do something with it. That's another part of this. Since 2017, here's an interesting statistic in crime. Homicides have increased 39% in the city of Phoenix since 2017. Rape and robbery is down 3%, but aggravated assault is up 14%. Burglary is down, theft and larceny is down, but arson is way up. Now, that is citywide, but how does it differ precinct to precinct? That's the other part of it. So this is where the criminal reduction plan, the most active places, a disproportionate amount of the criminal behavior in our city is concentrated in specific geographical locations within each precinct. Patrol officers are expected to perform intelligence-directed patrol activities designed to prevent and control crime while identifying criminal offenders. So it is laser focused in many areas, and we'll get into staffing in a moment. Prohibited possessors, going after the people that aren't supposed to have firearms but do, and then a violent offenders with outstanding warrants, getting those people before. And this, I want you to hear the chief talking about the hotspots. They are different in different places.
It's the time of day, day of week. You really need to dig into the data and see what's happening during those times. It's going to be nuanced across different areas. Some areas it might be the evening. Some areas it might be the mornings. And those precinct commanders that are closest to the work know that about their areas. And that's what we expect of them.
So I talked to him about goals and what the goals are, because they're pretty. I would say lofty goals in this. One is to implement an operational business model focused on reducing crime through operational strategies, performance measurements, and accountability measures. In other words, holding officers and detectives and holding each of these divisions and these different units to the highest standard of success. But that leads to the next goal, reducing the number of violent crimes in Phoenix by 5%, property crimes by 8%. They want to address the most active hotspots in the city through targeted and high visibility policing efforts within each precinct. That's another thing. And I talked to the chief about this in traffic. I talk about all the time. Phoenix has got a big issue with pedestrian deaths. Our streets are pretty wide, and at night they get pretty dark, and you have people crossing the street and they've been getting hit. One of the things that Phoenix has been adding are those crosswalks that are activated by a cross don't cross signal that stops traffic with flashing red lights to get people safely from one side of the street to the other. The other part of this, though, is having police out there. It's difficult when you're understaffed, because it doesn't mean that speed isn't a problem, and it doesn't mean that that speed isn't one of the issues. But when you prioritize what your officers have to do on response and patrol, how high on that list is traffic? But it's one of those things that high visibility reduces these problems. And that is the lesson here, is that just like in traffic, when you see a motorcycle cop driving on the streets of Phoenix, on the surface streets, isn't it magic that everybody finds their turn signals? Isn't it magic that everybody drives a lot closer to the speed limit and a lot nicer to each other? And that is where I think that the high visibility part of this to diminish crime comes from. What we're going to do in just a moment is Stephen Richer joined me, and Stephen Richer is the county recorder. And for once, the whole conversation was not about election integrity, but protecting your home and your property. I'll talk about that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Appreciate you spending some time with us. Again, anytime you can be with us, we appreciate it. Stephen Richer joined us. He's the county recorder, and they have launched a new program to help people combat title fraud. Now, I will tell you, I've signed up for this when we got the notice last week. Mostly I did it because I knew I was going to be talking to Stephen, and I wanted to make sure I knew what it was all about. A, I was surprised at how easy it was, and B, looking into this is a great idea, and it's free. It's absolutely free. But what is this protecting against? And this is Stephen Richer talking about it.
We have been hearing more about title fraud, and this is when somebody forges your signature, gets a notary to fraudulently notarize the document, and unlawfully attempts to convey title to your property away to somebody else. And then before you know it, somebody has sold your property out from underneath you.
Yeah, so they sell your property out, and it happens, you know, more often than not, it happens in these areas.
People inherit property from a deceased family member, or if they hold property that they don't live at regularly. And so this tool is meant to alert people whenever anything is recorded containing certain names that you enter, such that if, heaven forbid, this does happen, you can immediately take action and not just find out about it 6 months later, as we've heard from some people who have been victims of this crime.
So what's cool about this is it's not just limited to land. It's anything that's titled in your name or the name of an entity, such as your trust or a company. You can go to, you can have that. You can have all of that be notified if someone is trying to make changes in those documents. So I asked him, how often does this happen?
We don't think it happens all that often, but if it does happen, and then it really turns your life upside down. And the longer that it takes you to catch it, the harder it is to unwind.
And that's the issue. And I use the analogy of having credit monitoring, which I have. I think most people do. Recently, within the last year, somebody tried to open a credit card in my name, and they had got far enough in the process where it triggered an alert for me. And so I had to call, and they were doing it through Bank of America, which I don't have an account at Bank of America. So I actually went to a local branch of the bank, and I said, here, this is what happened. It was, of all things, an Alaska Airlines card they tried to open, but it was a Bank of America card. And they looked, said, nope, nobody opened an account. You're safe. You're good. But I was notified, and I was on it that morning. It happened to be a Saturday morning. I had to find a branch that was open. But what I'm saying is, when someone makes an attempt like that, it's better to find out they're trying to do it now. Because when I called them and told the people that, because what I did, I got a notification saying that someone had tried to do this, and I got another notification from Bank of America saying, we need more information before we can finish this process. I was able to shut it down before this person was able to finish the process. They were never able to open an account in my name. So it's the same principle. If they can catch someone trying to do this early. And he warned, you know, he said, this is just a warning. This is, don't be terrified. This isn't, it is just more of a tool to stop these things from happening, which I thought was good. And he says there's already been a significant number of people that have signed up for this.
And we already have over 17,000 people who have signed up, and we just launched it a few days ago. So we're very excited about that. And clearly there was some demand for it. And we hope that number will keep going up.
Yeah, it's a free service. It doesn't cost you anything. If you want to go to recorder.maricopa.gov, recorder.maricopa.gov, you can go to that website, and you can, whatever names you have that you have property, any kind of property, whether it's physical property, land, or it is vehicles or whatever else, if it's titled in your name, you can then have that and link it to your web, your email address. And if somebody is trying to alter it, if somebody is trying to change it in any way, you will be notified so that you can get a hold of law enforcement and you can get a hold of people and say, hang on a minute, this isn't me. I'm not doing this. And, you know, in the day and age we live in, this is one of those areas where you think, okay, anytime you can make it safer and better, make it harder for people to cheat, it's a great idea. So I'm not going to play any of this, but I couldn't let him off the hook without talking about election integrity. But I'm going to give you an analogy with this right now. Do you think I'm being paranoid by having Stephen Richer on to talk about this? Do you think it's paranoia that I'm terrified that someone's going to steal my information and it's nonsense and there's no need to do it? The answer is probably not. You probably look at this and say, you know what? Anything's possible. People are becoming more and more clever every day. And so any way you can stop them and head them off is a good idea. I agree. That's true as well. So let me try to make it clever and jump to election integrity. What I mean by that is real election integrity. For the people out there, there's two sides to this conversation. We did talk to him about the recent judge's decision not to sanction Carrie Lake or her attorneys. But for everybody out there, I'm one of those people that don't believe the election was stolen. But I voted for Trump twice. I got no problem talking about who I've supported in elections. I'm pretty honest on the air, whether you like it or not. I voted for Donald Trump twice, but I don't think the election was stolen from him. And I don't think that the 2022 elections were stolen either. I don't. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be doing everything we can to protect our voting system in any way possible. So we've come up with a new system here. There is a new plan here to keep your property safe. And like Stephen Richer says, I'm not telling you your property's in danger. I'm telling you this is a way to head it off, to stop anybody from being able to do it. We aren't seeing widespread title fraud. Well, the same thing happens with elections. Our voter rolls and cleaning up the voter rolls is a good step to make sure that there aren't ballots out there just floating around, whether somebody steals them and uses them or not. It's better to not have them out there. Am I right? I mean, it's true. It's a true story. Showing ID to vote, that's something most people think are reasonable. My point is, in these conversations, we can have a reasonable conversation on how we make things better and safer without having to choose, I'm either over here and think it was stolen, or I'm over here and I think everything is perfect and nothing needs to change. We have to stop with those extreme thoughts and only having to be able to choose one side or the other. There is middle ground that says, I want things better. I want them as safe as possible, without saying, I believe that's true because it's such a mess, all the elections are compromised. I just think that's a good analogy for what he's doing here. Coming up in a moment, the Great Migration continues. Large numbers of people continue to move to Florida and Texas and here in the state of Arizona. We'll discuss why next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Some songs just take you to a place, don't they? Anybody that's ever been to Fort Myers Beach, Florida, this takes me back to the 1980s and the Lanikai Resort on the beach. At one time, one of the nicest beach resorts in Southwest Florida. Now, deemed one of the worst spring break hotels on the planet. Thanks for being here as I go down memory lane. The Great Migration continues, and that's what I want to talk about, is the reasons why things happen. It's because of the reasons we do things. I talk about being intentional in the things that we do, and I learned this the hard way. I'm certainly not one to give advice. If you take advice from me, do it. Take my advice with a grain of salt, because every lesson I've learned the hard way and usually multiple times. I've gotten sound advice in my life. I've been surrounded by mentors that I didn't deserve, and man, I didn't take it. I just didn't. I learned the hard way most of the time. You know, you got to run headfirst into that wall five or six times before you realize it hurts you more than it does the wall. But the state of Arizona has made dramatic changes in the last decade to its economy and how it's structured, its tax base and how it's structured and how we regulate businesses. I talk about this a lot. But if you look at what's happening around the country, people are loyal, especially if you're born somewhere, and there are specific places where people are loyal. New York is one of them. You are either a New Yorker or you're not a New Yorker. And whether you love them or you hate them, they are prideful in the fact that they're from New York. And I think that's terrific. I love New York City. When I go to Manhattan, I can get lost in a one block area. I just love it. There is kind of an atmosphere. There is a vibe in New York that you can't find anywhere else. And I love it. But I wouldn't want to live there. It is so expensive. It is so expensive to live there. And they find new ways of digging into people's pockets. And it seems like the more you make, the more they want. So wealthy people have been leaving New York in droves, and they've been going to Florida, where the income tax rate is zero, where the regulation is a lot less. It's a right-to-work state. You're not bound by these oppressive union contracts and union rules and held hostage by union demands. Texas, if you look at Texas, the same thing. And many people are moving there. So Californians are going to Texas, and New Yorkers and people from Chicago are finding their way down to Florida. And there's reasons why it's happening. You look at where we are positioned. We have been, by experts, everybody's talking about this recession and what's going to happen and what could happen and what may happen. And are we in a recession? You call it what you want. But people are hurting financially. We are withstanding that better than most places. We are not seeing the kinds of layoffs here in Arizona that are happening in other parts of the country. We've diversified our economy, so if one industry takes a bit of a step backwards, that other industries are there to pick up the slack and hire people where they're not out of work for long. All of that is important to sustaining a society. Our backbone in the country is small business. Well, we are as small business friendly as you can get in the state of Arizona, and we're improving as much as we can all the time. That focus, I talk about the intention of this, the intentionality, the previous administration intentionally. So when I talk about my disagreements with the new governor politically, it's nothing personal. I've met the governor on a couple of occasions, and I think she's a very nice woman. And but my disagreements are founded in what's worked, what we've watched happen. And it's worked for most of us. We understand that there are people, we do struggle with homelessness, and we are seeing people being evicted. But we can bring those people along with the growth in this economy. But it's also shameful if we stop the growth in the economy because of people that are not being successful. We should do something about that, but we shouldn't hinder the growth. That doesn't seem right. We should be bringing as much money and as much business and diversity into this state. And I'm talking about business diversity as much as I'm talking about all the other kinds of diversity, whether it's racial or gender, and, you know, and mixing and making sure women have access to higher paying jobs. I agree with all of that. But if you look at how Arizona's performed and what they've done in the tech world and how we've watched this large expanse giving people opportunities, and it's not so much, it is the people that are fighting it out. If you're duking it out right now and you're one of the people that is trying to keep your head above water and you're doing the best you can, I don't think there's anything more honorable. To be honest, if you are an honest, hardworking person with a job, hold your head high. You don't have to be the CEO of a company. You don't have to be wealthy to gain my respect or the respect of most people. If you work for a living, if you work hard and you do everything you can to be self-sufficient, you deserve the respect. You deserve that respect, and you should get it. My issue is when we start seeing the class warfare stuff creep in California, the idea that they're going to try to go to a system as early as 2025 that would charge you based on your income for electricity. So if you make more, you pay more. It's odd to me, and I'll explain why. Punishing success never seems to be a way to be successful. It would be, again, if you are going to tell somebody else, if you're a college student and you're listening and you disagree with me, it's like saying you've worked very, very hard to achieve your 4.0 average, but there are people in this class that have under a 3.0 average, and in order to get this class average up higher, we're going to take some of your points, we're going to give you a 3.5 to give them a 3.2 or whatever. So we're going to lower your 4.0 to get their grades up. That wouldn't make sense to you. You worked hard. You've earned it. Well, it's easy for you. You know, you're one of those people it's easy for. And it might be. You know, for me, I've never been afraid of public speaking. And for other people, that's very difficult for them. So I should be limited or punished because it's something that I'm good at. Or, you know, you may be skilled at something. Every kid is different. If you have multiple kids in your family, you probably have one child that school is very easy for them and they can make really good grades without a whole lot of effort. They can get their work done. And you've got another one that's got to put in and toil at that in order to get that same level of success. You don't let them off the hook. That's just an area they have to work harder. We do it in athletics all the time. I've talked about some of the people that I've played for and played with and played against in sports growing up where I did. Watching a guy like a Deion Sanders, who I was teammates with, watching Deion be as naturally gifted as anybody I've ever seen and always be the best on the field in every field he stepped on, whether it was the football field, the baseball field, or the basketball court. The guy was a Division I recruit in basketball as well out of high school. He was just a naturally gifted human being, one of the most gifted athletes next to Bo Jackson in my lifetime. But he also worked his butt off and he worked hard and he earned everything that he had. But he had a gift that he took full advantage of. There are other people that stand shoulder to shoulder with him in wins and records and ability, and they had to work twice as hard to get there. And we just have to, hard work is worthwhile. The idea that we're going to go after people that are successful and wealthy and say, because you have more, we're going to take more, you're running people out of your states. California is one of them. Coming up in a moment, should a college student's grades depend on the proper use of pronouns? Going to explain what happened in Cincinnati and see if you agree with what happened to this one college student. We'll get to it coming up in just a moment.
strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
And we know that there's a lot of people that are still hurting financially out there. Record-setting inflation, food prices are still really high. There's a lot of families that can't make ends meet. Our population shrinks this time of year, which means all of us need to intentionally give to keep these people's heads above water if you can. So Gatos and Chad have partnered with St. Mary's Food Bank with Food Bank Fridays, but you don't have to wait till Friday to donate. Just text the word food to 411-923 to make a donation. It's a simple way to donate. $5 or $1 buys 5 meals. So $5. Think about how you can help so many people. Just text food to 411-923. Thanks for supporting Food Bank Friday, presented by the UPS Store. There is a student who received a zero on a class project or a prospectus for a class project. And because she didn't use the right pronouns. I want you to hear her explain this. She's from Cincinnati.
I got a zero on a project proposal in my class because I used the term biological women, which is apparently not allowed anymore. She even said it was a good project proposal, but I got a zero because I used this term that's exclusionary and not allowed anymore. So, and I 100% know that this is like the most biased grade ever because my project is about transgenders competing in biological women's sports. How am I supposed to do my final project if I can't use the word biological women? But that's what my project is about.
So it is an interesting take, and I want to ask this. This is a First Amendment question as much as anything else. Here's another thing for people to wrestle with. Christians are hosting a prayer vigil while the Senate in California is honoring one of the members of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. I've got a strong record of saying to people, you have a right to live your life any way you want. Protest, say the things you want to. Even if they're offensive, the First Amendment protects your right to say them. That doesn't mean other people have to celebrate them. There's a difference there. You know, the LA Dodgers are the ones that brought these Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence into the forefront. And here's what happened. This is an organization. It's a gay activist organization that is very anti-Catholic, especially, but they are anti-Christian. And when I say that, they mock the Christian faith. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence do a thing. There's something in Catholicism called the Stations of the Cross. At Easter time, it is done. And what it does is it shows through scripture, it shows the times and how Jesus carried his own cross to his own crucifixion. And it is a very somber, very solemn ceremony within the Catholic Church. If you've gone into a Catholic church, the Stations of the Cross are on the walls on both sides of the pews. And there is a ceremony that goes along with it where scripture is read and a priest leads the ceremony and congregants follow along, literally walking through the church at the Stations of the Cross. And it is something that is very meaningful in Catholicism. But in Christianity in general, they would do this. They mock that by doing a pub crawl. You know what a pub crawl is? They do a pub crawl to mock the Catholic Church and the Stations of the Cross. It is weird that the LA Dodgers, during their Pride game, were going to honor the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence because in LA, a large number of the fans of the LA Dodgers, they have a huge Hispanic population, and a huge part of the Hispanic population are Catholics that take their faith and their religion very seriously. The way that they mock the Mother Mary, Jesus' Mother Mary is a sacred symbol is the wrong word, but she is sacred in the Catholic Church. And it is, unless you were raised Catholic like I was, it's hard to understand how important Mary is in Catholicism, but especially to women, it is a very important part of their faith. It is very strange to me that the Dodgers rethought that idea of honoring this group of people that mock somebody's faith, and then to go back on their word and say we're not going to have them on the field. But oh, wait a minute, we changed our mind. Now we are. You've got a huge Catholic population that is a fan of your team, but more than that, in California, you are saying to a group of people, you're sending a mixed message. This girl who got a zero because she said biological male or biological female, biological women. What you are telling people is now some of your words are no longer allowed to be used. It is the kid that couldn't walk with his graduating class because he said there's only two genders. They are picking the culture war here, not the other side. This is a culture war because you are picking it. You are saying you can believe what you want, but if you say it, you're going to be punished. That is an American on any level. And I brought up the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence because they can do whatever they want. Not only are they allowed to say it, they're being honored by the LA Dodgers and the California State Senate for mocking other people. Isn't that a mixed message on bullying and not being inclusive and being mean? And they're the epitome of all of those things, and yet they're being honored. So you tell me what that mixed message is. You explain to me what that mixed message means. Why is this acceptable behavior? It shouldn't be. In the minds of most, it isn't. And I just wonder, when does it end? Does it ever end? It's a very good question if it's ever going to end. Coming up just after 11 o'clock, I had a very interesting conversation. The Phoenix Police Chief Michael Sullivan was in studio with me this morning for two segments. There is a new crime reduction plan that is in place in Phoenix PD that they're implementing soon. And he explained to me why it's there and what it does. I'll let you hear what he had to say in just a moment.